Hello, everybody who is listening, and welcome to another episode of The Plumped Serpent, your podcast about nature connection, self-empowerment, and well-being, with your host, Isabel Bloom, and my guest today, Alison Waters. Alison is the director and principal landscape architect of Allscape in Stoke & Trent, UK. Her purpose is to create spaces, places, public open spaces, developments, and gardens with a wildlife-rich, sustainably drained, beautiful, and unique design. Spaces that bring nature to your door and are for people and for wildlife. Spaces where people feel connected to nature and rainwater and can heal their minds. Welcome, Alison, and a wonderful day.
Hello, hi. I'm not so sure it's wonderful out there. It's a bit foggy and drizzly out there today.
Yeah, here it is, very, very foggy because we live near a very large river, and yeah, the water is always present, especially in autumn and winter time, and we have nearly fog here for I think yeah, 2 or 3 months or so. Yeah. So yeah,
I know it's a bit grey and drizzly outside today in Stoke, so I took my kids on the school walk this morning and it was a little bit chilly, a little bit damp.
Yeah. Yeah,
all good fun.
Yeah, but you can put on the good clothes, so
yeah
it's no thing.
As long as you're prepared, it doesn't really matter.
Yes, that's sure. So how did it come that you design gardens and spaces like you do, with the focus or also the intention to include wildlife and the well-being for people?
Well, I suppose I've always had an interest in wildlife since I was talking about this the other day to somebody, and I didn't realise that I had an interest in wildlife from quite a young age. My mum and dad had me gardening a lot. I didn't particularly like weeding, but that was where it started, really, being outdoors. I didn't probably spend a huge amount of time outdoors, but when I did, I valued it. And we used to enjoy going for walks in the countryside. When we went away on holiday, we were always in the countryside. And I think as the years progressed, I became a landscape architect, to cut a long story short. And I suppose when I eventually set up my own business, which was 4 years ago, or thereabouts, just under 4 years ago, I really wanted to change the way that landscape architecture was seen, I suppose, and the designs that I create, I didn't want them to just be generic. I'd seen so much over the years of generic landscapes of the same thing being churned out. And I saw the value in bringing wildlife into spaces and how that actually improves your well-being. So when you go out and for walks in the countryside and things like that, you actually feel a lot better by the time you actually get back. But a lot of people don't have the access to that within the urban environment. I live in a city, and you don't tend to appreciate what you have around you. So creating the wildlife near to where you live is invaluable, and I suppose that's where it began, really. And and then a couple of years ago I went on a course in sustainable drainage, and it blew my mind, absolutely blew my mind, and I realized quite how important it is to clean our water, slow our water, and actually appreciate our water, our rainwater as it comes down. And I think a lot of the time we just want it to run away and escape and disappear, and we don't want to see it, but then it comes back to haunt us as it comes up through the drains when we have massive rainwater events, and then it floods people's houses and we have all the problems associated with it. So I think for me there's so much opportunity with water that we don't see, and we're still going down the route of trying to hide it get rid of it as quickly as possible, when actually there's so many opportunities to actually create something exciting with it that people can actually see and appreciate and enjoy before it then goes into the ground and does its job. So, yes.
Yes, and that's really unique about your offerings, because as you said, water is not really included in the design, and also in garden architecture or garden design. And for me, it's just mind-boggling, because I mean, water is in a cycle, and it is really in an obvious cycle. You don't have to be an environmental scientist to see that. So, and we need water. It's just so important for us. And as you said, we pave everything. I mean, in the garden and the city, really nearly every inch is paved and closed off. So the water doesn't get into the soil. But we just miss so much there. I mean, the soil is a filter for the water, and it nourishes everything in the soil. So we miss really, we miss big opportunities there, and also design opportunities, as you said.
There's a lot of designs out there in relation to the movement of water. I mean, a lot of housing developments these days have to have sustainable drainage.
Yes.
But the quality of that is missed, I think. I think there's an opportunity missed. And I think when we see new developments with flat roofs and things like that, none of them now should be without green roofs, because they slow the flow of water, they clean the water, and they're an important element for wildlife as well. So they might be expensive, or so they think they might be expensive, but actually in reality the cost is to the environment. And I think for me, I think there's a level of desire to change all of that, to actually allow people to see what you can actually achieve with water. And things like, you know, you don't appreciate that when people put driveways in, the water, they'll try to get the water away. So they'll try to get the water to either the road or into a drain to actually get it away. But it's all those sorts of things like that, that there are other ways of moving water and storing water and not causing an issue with it, you know, not making it a hazard, but an opportunity. And the wildlife will benefit heaps from it. So yes. I mean, I'm not talking about deep, you know, huge rainfall events. This is your everyday sort of, you know, water runoff.
Yes, so. And it comes, yeah, it comes earlier,
lot, especially this time of year. Yes, but I think that as climate change progresses, we're going to see a lot more water and a lot more rain. And if we don't change the way that we drain our landscapes, our hard landscapes, then I think, you know, we're going to have more of a problem.
Yes, but we produce this problem. I mean, also with the geoengineering, there is a lot of going on, you know. I mean, when you look at the sky, you don't see any more normal clouds. So there is a lot going on and a lot of intervention there. So, yeah, it is all man-made, really, concerning this issue. Yeah. And so what is then your biggest challenge to convince people to integrate what you offer?
I don't think convincing is something that I can do. I think convincing means that it's almost like a forced approach. And I think the idea is to influence people, those who might be a little bit interested but haven't really stepped into that field will be interested. There's always going to be those that resist. We can't do a huge amount about that until government policy changes. And even then, there'll still be the resistors. But I think it's about influencing those who have an interest in it to see what they can do. You've got, I mean, you you can do it citywide. So, you know, local authorities can do this, but you can also do some things in your garden, you know, simple interventions. There are some costly ones, there are some not so costly ones. And these are sort of things that are happening all over the place, but possibly not enough. This is something that, you know, wildlife, you know, people sort of save little spaces for wildlife, you know, but I think it needs more. We need to do a lot more. And I think the more we dabble in it, the less it's going to change. I think you have to be on board you know, and know that you've got to do something about it. And otherwise, I think we will still continue to dabble in it 10 years later and not actually have achieved enough. I do think there is a ripple effect. I think when you have, you change one person, what will happen is they will, their friends may see what they've done and go, oh, that's really interesting. And then they'll go off and do that. And then their friends will see what they've done and they'll go off and do that. And so you have that, but it's either ripple or butterfly effect, whatever you like to call it. And that's huge. So in some ways, you only have to influence a small number of people to make a massive difference. But that change has to be full. It has to be, you know, a big change, not a little tiny intervention. I think we've got to make some big strides over the next couple of years to actually make some big changes, particularly in our cities. I think those are where the biggest challenges are. So, and local authority, I think, is they're slowly coming around, there's a lot to do there. There's a lot to do. I'm not saying that they aren't doing. They are. They have their struggles with finances at the moment. Lots of budgets have been cut. But then we have, you know, it's the volunteer armies kind of thing where people go out and assist with tree planting or creating, you know, meadows, those sorts of things that I think are going to be so invaluable over the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's up to everyone to take action.
It is. And I say you won't get everybody. And I think to expect everybody to be on board is unrealistic. But I think once we start, I think the momentum will get going. And I don't think I think there is a little bit of a start. I think that it just needs to pick up a little bit more over the next couple of years. And I think once we see it, you know, people's gardens changing, you know, I mean, my front garden, for example, is a meadow and a butterfly garden. It has no other value other than to serve wildlife. I don't see the point of having it as a cut lawn.
Yes. So
I changed it. And so it, you know, it might look untidy to some, but for us it brings us great joy. So
yeah, you know that there are these discussions about aesthetics, beauty, practicability, and yeah, also, you know, for example, I live in Switzerland, and here we have the issue that you want to always please your neighbors, you know. Everything has to be neat and clean and organized, and for example, my garden is a jungle for some people. So there are plants and wildlife everywhere. And and for people in the beginning, it was very kind of strange to see that. But yeah, I talked with them, explained it to them, and now they appreciate it. They evaluate the sea, that it is changing over the seasons. There are many different colors. There are tons of birds there and other animals. And they have something pretty to look at, so they kind of value it over time. And as you said, there are examples. You just can't stand there with your example and influence, also maybe convince others. It's just a more diplomatic word, I think, influencing than convincing. But perhaps, in the end, yeah. it's in the end, the attention is the same. So, examples are really, really important. And also the how you say it, how you explain it. If you just come always with the finger, you must, then people just push you away. And
I think the issue at the moment I see is that when you have world leaders meeting at like COP26 and you have people like David Attenborough and campaigners as well, I think people find it too big. I think that's one of the issues. And when you talk to people, they said, well, it's such a big issue, how can I possibly make a difference to the planet, little old me? And I think if every little old me was to go out and do something, and you probably find the first year it might just be a patch of a meter squared of wildflower seed, but then the next year it might be 2 meters squared, and the next year it might be 4 meters squared, and then eventually your whole garden, you just go, right, okay, let's keep the areas that we need, and then let the rest do, you know, plant stuff for wildlife and let wildlife do what it needs to do. Because once you start getting into that mode of seeing it for what it is, the actual maintenance of it is quite low. It is quite low. I mean, we've missed our window of opportunity to cut our lawn, our meadow, shall I say, and it needs to be cut ASAP, but it's so wet, I can't cut it. So, yeah. And we haven't had that opportunity of cutting the meadow. And I know that will have an impact next year in terms of what we get. But that's just how it is. At least I've still got a meadow and I know that it will still be there next year. I think if you cut your lawn, you're cutting your lawn every fortnight, and in the summer you're cutting every week, and it has very little value. I'm not saying that lawns aren't great, because I think lawns are. I think I much prefer to have a lawn than I would a patio. You know, or paved areas. Everybody needs a patio, of course, to sit out and enjoy your garden. But lawns do slow the flow of water. They're important for soil insects and invertebrates. They're absolutely essential. And those are things that people forget when you either pave it or you put plastic grass down. I mean, our back garden is like a swamp. There's not a lot we can do about it, but I wouldn't put plastic grass down. I wouldn't put plastic grass down for love nor money, because it's horrendous. And that's something that we're seeing a lot more of, because it's convenient. There's a convenience in it. You don't have to cut it, but the environmental cost is astronomical.
Yes, yeah. You mentioned some crucial points here. This kind of mindset, I can't do anything because I'm so small. This is kind of crazy in my understanding, because everybody of us is the same. We are equal. Nobody is better or more important or whatever. Yes, there are these politicians, but they talk a lot and do so less. So, and we can do very much. So for me, this is just crazy. But
there doesn't need to be perfection either.
No, this is another thing. Perfection doesn't exist anyway.
No, so, it doesn't need to be perfect. I mean, I'm yes. far from perfect. I'm a busy working mum, with my own business. Yeah. And as I said, we haven't managed to cut our meadow. It's just how it is, doesn't matter if it's not perfect, if it doesn't go according to plan, if the hedges aren't cut at certain times of year, it does not matter. We we have to get out of this mindset of am I doing it right? Is it right? Is it perfect? You know, that's where we've come from. It doesn't matter. We just got to give it a go. We just got to have fun doing it, making it for us and for others. You know, it's we need to just let go of this perfection element of it. And then, because when you go into the woodland, the trees aren't neatly placed every 2 meters. Yes. You know, each bulb is not, you know, each sort of bluebell isn't, you know, 2 centimeters apart. It doesn't matter that everything's scattered everywhere. It's haphazard. It's chaos. And that's what our worlds need to start becoming, a little bit more chaotic in terms of well, that doesn't mean that we can't have a bit of neatness and we can't enjoy cutting a lawn because it serves a purpose. It doesn't mean that we can't have paths through our meadows. It doesn't mean that we can't, you know, clip our hedges. It doesn't mean that we can't, you know, enjoy neat borders with box hedging or, you know, lavender borders and things like that. It doesn't mean that. It just means that then, you know, chaos is okay. Getting it wrong is okay. Trying again is okay. You know, it didn't work this time is okay. Doesn't mean that you give up and not do it again. You know, keep trying. Something will work. And I think that's where, you know, I like this sort of dynamic aspect of nature and wildlife. If you get it wrong the first time, it's not really wrong. It's just how it is. It's different. That's all.
Yes, it's about exploring, experiencing, learning and going with the flow as nature does. And we are so much in this mindset of controlling everything. We want to control everything and have this kind of crazy security that doesn't exist. Actually, it's just an idea, because you don't have security. It's really just an idea. It's, as you said, it's this letting go of our idea how things have to be. I mean, also in a natural garden, you need to do some work, because otherwise with succession, you just have a forest in the end.
I know. I mean, exactly. It doesn't come with nothing. You can't just leave it I mean, you can leave it if you wanted to create that sort of environment. That's fine. Management is important, but it's not as high maintenance as something like an annual border with, you know, annual plants, or, you know, neatly clipped edges on your lawns and things like that. These are sort of Edwardian, Victorian designs that sort of became important within our society when the Industrial Revolution was so profound that parks became the big thing to get away from the smog. It was, you know, they were there for to promenade, to show off, but also to provide the green lungs of the cities that were so dirty. But we seem to, we don't seem to have moved on from that. In our gardens and our public open spaces still seem to need this element of perfection, of management, of keeping everything tidy and neat and controlled and ordered. And yet it's so difficult to keep that. That's why people always sort of say, well, I don't really want too many plants in my garden, because I've got to manage them. Well, if you go more naturalistic, that it's not so difficult to manage. You know, that they aren't, I mean, my butterfly garden will just get, a lot of it will just get hacked down. It'll just be pruned, you know, once a year, and then everything will come up again. And that's how it is. And I've had some absolute disasters with plants in my butterfly garden, they just didn't work. And, you know, but it's how it is. You know, I keep putting other bits in and to see if they work. It's experiments. You've got to have fun with it and know that not everything will work. Not every plant will like your soil. Not every plant will like the position it's in. You know, But when you do have nature, they will find their way of you know, slipping in the cracks that you didn't expect them to go into, and they'll find their place where they want to be. And that's just, that can be for anything, really. You know, foxgloves absolutely hate my garden, but then the other day I found last year I found them in a space that, oh, they like it there then, you know. Yes. Not where I put them, but yes, they like it somewhere else. So
yeah, that's really the thing. You invite plants to be in your garden. If you just start with accepting nature and giving nature space, it comes to you. And it is really amazing in what short time you can boost wildlife. I mean, when I think of my garden, it was just a desert, and they had chickens and some bushes and three fruit trees, but was nothing there. And I mean, 1, 2 years, 3 years later, it was just full of life, and it is changing every year. And I planted so many perennial plants that, as you said, didn't want to be there.
No.
because the environment was not what they just preferred. And but yes, it's really, as you said, it's try and error, and you learn so much when you observe. You learn so much, and you get really connected to the place where you are. That's also kind of thing. You develop this kind of sense of belonging, not only to the place but also to nature, what surrounds you, and you appreciate, you give it some value, and therefore you also give value to your being there. And for me, it's always mind-boggling. People travel to whatever places, exotic places, to enjoy wildlife, but when they have a garden, they don't take the opportunity to create wildlife or to offer spaces for wildlife there, and they mm-hmm. have it, I mean, at their front door. So yes, maybe it's not so extraordinary like a jungle where you meet the panthers and jaguars and whatever, but when you dive into this absolutely amazing webs and this insect world, for example, I mean, insects are just when you watch a science fiction movie and you see kind of aliens, quote unquote, you don't have to watch science fiction movies. You just go out and watch
and look at
insects and all these beings that live in the soil. It's just mind-boggling.
And I think it's really important as well that we provide space for wildlife as well. I mean, it's not just in our gardens, it's the new houses that we're building. That's something that's actually starting to come through. I've noticed that bat bricks are being put in houses, and you know, we're seeing more of that, because the older houses, you know, my house is a 1920s 1930s house, and the soffits, you know, the edges of the roofs and everything are perfect for bats. Except not on this house, because when we moved in, all of the soffits have been replaced with plastic. So there's absolutely nowhere for bats to go. Mm. And this is something that you see everywhere. People don't appreciate that the old traditional type of soffits, which had a gap between the house and the sort of the guttering boarding, allowed for bats to you know, sort of roost in the day.
Yeah.
And bats, you see, I used to have a bat license many years ago, because I used to work with bats quite a lot, and you know, one bat can eat well over 1,000 insects a night, and so the balance is crucial to keep. We have to maintain that balance, and we seem to forget that there's layers of wildlife, so it's not just on the ground. It's all the way up, you know, so houses actually have an important responsibility We have house sparrows and, you know, starlings. They tend to like to nest in houses. Jackdaws, a lot of people don't like them because they nest in chimney pots. You know, we've covered our chimney pots, but because we were in an old house, we have about 8 chimney pots on a roof. So they actually nest in between the chimney pots. These are things that when you build a new houses, they don't have these elements to them. But jackdaws, all nature is in balance. You know, we might not like jackdaws. We might not like magpies. We might not like, you know, carrion crows. We might not like certain, you know, creepy crawlies and spiders. You know, believe me, I do not like spiders crawling across my face at night. But, you know, it's happened. It's one of those things. But it's part of nature. You know, the house spiders have a really important role to play. They eat the insects that we don't really want in the house. You know, they keep them under control, the moths that are around, that, you know, all of the things. It's not just nature outside, it's nature inside. We've created these boxes to live in, and we need to start sharing them a little bit more, but maybe not with rats and mice, but, you know.
Yeah, they're very present in my house where I live, and you can really hear them dancing.
Yeah, I think if you're rural, particularly, you get them. I mean, we have had mice in the house, and we've, you know, I know that there are rats that live very close to where we are. You know, we see them quite often, so we have to limit the amount of bird food that we put out because of the issues associated with them. But that's cities for you. Cities, you know, if we produce waste,
yes,
and we don't tidy our waste away properly, you will breed rodents, you know, and rodents will take advantage. And then you have foxes, you have your urban foxes. So it's all a cycle, you know. Everything's a cycle, everything is a balance. You know, if you increase the number of something else will increase, and something else will increase. And so, you know, we have to maintain that level of balance within our rural community, rural, you know, sort of nature, plus our urban world. Our urban world is really important. And I think it's becoming more and more important as we move forward. I mean, there aren't a huge number of people that can get out to the countryside. We've got to bring it in, got to bring that countryside into the cities. You know, our open spaces need to change. They need to transform. They've got to. They need to serve a different purpose. They're not there to just be an incidental open space. That they have to. They need to contribute more to the environment. And that might be. They might be an orchard, you know, community orchard. They might serve a purpose of a community allotment. They might be a meadow. They may be important picnic areas where people can congregate. I think we don't value our open spaces enough until they're under threat from being sold, you know, for development. And I think then people start getting up and sort of raising the banners. But by that point, it's too late. I think we've got to start looking at them and saying, actually, these are really important spaces. And yeah, we do have vandalism, particularly in cities. You know, the vandalism of things is high, but the more communities come together to actually value these spaces, the less the vandalism will actually happen.
Yes, so when people are present in these spaces, this is really less an issue. And yeah. There is so much research available when it comes to the benefits of green spaces or wild spaces in urban areas, especially, where you can really see that people benefit on so many levels from these spaces. I mean, from mental health issues to more community, to a better sense of understanding each other, and also our impacts on the environment we have, from also the aspect to the costs, or I mean, the financial aspect for cities, it is really that there are proofs that with a green area around also new houses, people are more willing to pay more because they see the value. And it's not only for the inhabitants of this building, it's also for the owners of this building more profitable. Because when you think of nature right from the beginning of the planning of a new site, you really can you can save money in the end. So it's really also about this mindset of integrating nature from the start and not just at the end of the planning process when you look at your budget and you see, oh, we have so money so much money left, so we can do like this, we can plant one tree and that's enough. So
I think unfortunately I think a lot of projects, landscape is the last thing to go in, and so when development projects, particularly commercial and commercial projects, where landscape is the bit on the outside that actually sets off the building, say perhaps, or allows people to appreciate the building more, often the budget has been bled dry by the development process and there isn't enough left. So I think in moving forward on projects like that, the landscape budget has to be safeguarded. It's critical that budget is not eaten into in any aspect whatsoever, that the value associated with that budget is the same. And architects would want their buildings to be protected as much as possible. They compromise on certain elements within their design in order to get the build moving forward. Landscape architects often compromise all the time, but they compromise to the point where there isn't very much left at all other than the hard landscape, because that's important, because that's the bit that actually allows people to get to the building. And I do think as well, in sort of commercial aspects as well, you have people who work in places, work in sort of commercial buildings, industrial buildings, things like that, and they actually need to have that space to be able to go outside and sit or be able to walk somewhere where they feel in nature and relaxed. To have that right outside their doorstep at work will improve the quality of their experience at work. They have that opportunity to get a break from looking at a screen or looking at machines or working on machines or being in a very dark environment. They can get out and enjoy what's around them. I don't think there's enough emphasis on the value that it has on our mental well-being, and we are nature at the end of the day. You can't get away from the fact that humans are part of the natural chain. Our brains have created incredible environments that we're in, the things that we've created and produced are fantastic if you think about that in comparison to all the other animals out there. And if we were only to allow our minds to relax a lot more, to become more present, to slow down, to appreciate nature, be in nature, be at one with nature. I don't mean like stripping off naked and prancing around in the, what I mean? It's just being present with nature and being enjoying it. I believe that our ability to create new things, to not still be stuck in where we are at the moment, where we are expecting new things. I think once we start to relax and I see that more, I see that there's more of a push against this sort of 9 to 5. There's a push against the stress. I'm seeing it. And we've got this sort of employer employee kind of situation where, you know, we want you to perform, but I want to have a life, you know, and we're getting all of that. I think once we start to appreciate that we have to slow down, we can't continue with the stress levels that we're doing. You know, stress is a massive factor in our physical health as well as our mental wellness. You know, stress is a big problem, and nature has a huge I wouldn't say it's not necessarily something that it's not like a pill, you know, type thing. You go out in nature and all's well and everything's, but it has an ability to relax you, to then be more present, and new thoughts will come, and you know, the mind and the body will relax into that rhythm. We need to start doing a lot more of that. And I think as we create more natural spaces, it's encouraging people outside into those spaces as well. That's going to be quite tough and challenging at the moment. But I think the pandemic has helped enormously to make people appreciate the outdoors a lot more.
Yeah, relaxation is indeed needed on many levels.
It is. And I think it's not really something that we should earn either. It's something that should be a right, isn't it? Relaxation, to relax, to have time for you. And I'm reminding myself of this because I'm absolutely madly busy at the moment. To have time for you as a person, to be able to just take a step back and just say, hang on a minute, you know, I actually need this. This is important to me in order to be able to function, because otherwise I think what happens is we end up becoming ill, but not ill in necessarily in our mental health. Physically, we become ill. We become ill catching things. You know, we are a very stressed society and world even. And those who are probably less stressed are the ones that have less illness. So we have to get into that cycle of slowing down, of relaxing, of taking time out to relax, of making sure that we put ourselves first in a lot of situations and say no.
Yes,
monsters there.
Boundaries are really a very important issues, and also just to realize that you don't need to be available 24/7.
The phone goes off. It needs to switch off. I mean, my working day is very different. I try not to work a 9 to 5. I can't work a 9 to 5, should I say, because I take the children to school, we walk to school, I do my best to pick them up from school, and then I'll start in the evening again when they've gone to bed. You know, they are younger, it helps, but that's my choice. And you know, that's something that I found important when I set up my business, because I wanted to have that time with my children. And then, you know, I'm not perfect. I still drive to school occasionally because I need to get back for a certain reason, or I need to go somewhere, or it's absolutely tipping it down with rain and it's a mile walk to get to school. You know, there are circumstances where I will do that, but the vast majority of the time I walk to school, and it is a really, you know, important time with the children. And, you know, we see all sorts of things on our walk to school. All sorts of things, wild things, you know. I think that it's a great opportunity for kids to be present with their environment as well, yeah, around them, even in urban environment. I mean, we walk on main roads all the way to school, but
they get, yeah, but they move things. I mean, they do, they move physically, so they do also something for their bodies, because they sit, yeah, the whole day in the school, so it makes total, yeah, sense. Yeah, we have so many opportunities actually to relax into our being on so many levels. And you mentioned that we have this amazing mind, but we really don't use it appropriately.
I think when it's busy, I think when it's so busy.
It's just messed up with things that are just not important at all.
we think so much that we get really busy, and our busy minds become busier and busier and busier and busier, and then we become stressed, and then we get snappy and ratty, and then but to actually be present, to actually stop that, allow our thoughts to just dissipate and move on and be in the moment, and nature helps us do that. That's that, you know, our gardens help us do that. I mean, I was all through, you know, when I've been the most busy, I'll find myself disappearing off to the greenhouse, or I'll sweep up leaves, or, you know, tend to something in the garden, because it's a shut off valve. It allows the mind to settle and stop thinking about everything that's going on. And you become present in that moment, doing what you're doing. And that's when new ideas come, new thoughts come, and we have the opportunity to change things and see things differently, relax in that moment. And that's often when our new ideas turn up, or we can actually see the light as to how to get through. But we just keep ploughing on, and if we keep ploughing on, we don't get that brain break, basically.
Yes, and this is really needed, because otherwise you just shut down. You know, it's just like an overload. So
yeah,
green spaces and natural spaces are really very, very important, not only for wildlife, but also for our overall well-being. Mm. Yes, that's true. Yeah, wonderful. So we already talked an hour. So
Oh my goodness.
You see, wow. it goes really fast. So yeah, thank you very much for this very insightful and mind-opening conversation we had. So how can people get in touch with you? Where do they find you?
I have a website, so that's orscape.co.uk. My email address, so you can contact me at any time, it's Alison with two L's at orscape.co.uk, and my mobile number is on my website as well, so you know, always available. And I prefer it when people email me, because I actually can then open dialogue and discussion. I'm also on LinkedIn and Twitter and all of those sorts of things as well, so as myself, as Alison Walters, and not as Orscape. It's just I have, you know, I'm generally around, as in, you know, I keep myself present online. I have taken myself off for a little bit because I just needed to have some time with the children, particularly over the summer holidays, and just enjoy time with them. So, but I'll be back.
Wonderful. So get in touch with Alison. She has really a unique approach to landscape design. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Plumped Serpent podcast. When you like this show, you can leave a message on our anchor site, share this podcast, or simply tell a friend about it. You might also become a member on my Patreon site, Plumped Serpent, where I offer you some valuable bonus content to deepen your connection with nature and yourself. And I appreciate when you tune in next week for our next episode. May the magic of the Plumped Serpent be with you.